for law through Moses was given. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. You might also say for the priesthood through Moses was given. And people today, Christians, still like to play with priesthood. They still like their go-betweens. They're still afraid to approach the deity directly. This is why they have set over themselves artificial priests. The Catholic Church is famous for this. They even dress up like priests, like it's Halloween. And they go through the ceremonies, and people love it. They don't want to approach God themselves. They're still afraid of God. Let the priest tell us what we need to know. Let the priest talk to God. We'll hear it from him. Because this God shakes us up. We don't know him personally, and they don't. And so they long to have go-betweens. They long to have intermediaries, so they don't have to talk to God directly. But oh, how beautiful it is to know God and to know his son Jesus Christ, through whom grace and truth came, and to trust him and to love him and to see that this is the same God of the Old Testament, but he reveals himself in increments. Let me read this again. This is a critical verse, John chapter 1, verse 17. For the law through Moses was given, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Sounds like you're a dispensationalist, Martin. I hate theological terms. If you're telling me that I'm someone who believes that God does different things at different times, then yes, that's the only sane way to read the scriptures. And here it is. If you want to call that a dispensationalist, all that means is that God dispenses different things at different times. At one point, he dispensed law, for the law through Moses was given. But grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. God is doing both actions.
And we finally get to talk about one of my favorite Bible characters, Melchizedek. Big old Melchizedek. I call him Mel for short. Mel and me are tight, you know? Yeah, Melchizedek. I talked to you about him earlier when I started introducing the book of Hebrews. Now we're getting into the thick of it in Hebrews chapter 7. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender. Used to be, I thought that all you had to do was mention Melchizedek and you are spiritual. I remember I wrote this newsletter back in 1986 when I started writing about God. Might have been 85, and I had a newsletter called Food for Thought. It was extremely boring. It was spiritual. There was some good meat there, I have to say. Well, actually, you know, Food for Thought, you know, not very creative title, not very snappy, but it worked at the time. I had 11 subscribers, and then the next year I had 11 subscribers, and the next year I had 11 subscribers. You know why? Because I tried to sound smart instead of just pouring out my heart, studying, freewheeling, putting my own take on things, putting my life into it, my personality, my very being. I kind of separated myself from the reader, and I was very wise and intelligent. It's like I was writing from my ivory tower. And I remember mentioning Melchizedek, and as soon as you mentioned him, you had the awe and respect of all your readers. So that was full of crap right there. Now, it's no longer something, this guy that I, you know, find I have cachet if I mention Melchizedek. It's just that this guy is interesting, and I just love the practicality of it. I didn't realize how practical it was and what God was doing when he introduced this character and why it's important to our Lord Jesus Christ in the thousand years and why it's important to the Hebrews to whom Paul is writing here in Hebrews chapter 7. So let's start reading about this mysterious character named Melchizedek. What mother would name her son Melchizedek? That's what I want to know. And what was his last name? Smith? Melchizedek Smith. Maybe Jones. Melchizedek Jones. I can just see that on his mailbox. No, you're right. I think some Amish people are named Melchizedek. Is it that? Yeah, it's Melchizedek. I tend to say Melchizedek. Maybe his first name was Dick, or maybe that's his. Maybe Melchizedek's his last name. You think it's his last name? That could be. His first name could be Dick, right? Dick Melchizedek. I don't know. Maybe he's one of these people where it just he goes by one name. You know, he's that epic, like you know, Cher or Madonna. They only need one name. All you need to say Madonna. Like, what's Madonna's last name? What do you mean, what's Madonna's last name? She's so epic, she doesn't need one. Who's a man who only has one name? 50 Cent? No, that's two. 50 and Cent. That doesn't work. I don't know. I'll think of one. Write me and let me know some epic men that have one name. But here's one of them. I think he's the lead of all of them. Melchizedek. King of Salem, priest of God Most High, who meets with Abraham returning from the combat with the kings. Chedorlaomer was the king that Abraham slaughtered in the Valley of the Kings. And he's coming back and he meets this guy. Now, this is the interesting part here. One of the interesting things is this Melchizedek was the king of Salem, priest of God. He was a king and a priest. He combined the offices of king and priest. Now, that's the ideal thing. But the thing is, Aaron couldn't handle that because, you know, Aaron was just one guy. He was a priest, and he was from Levi. You need to know this about the priesthood. There are 12 tribes in Israel, and the priesthood only came from the tribe of Levi, one of the 12 tribes. And then there was an order of priesthood, the Aaronic order, and Aaron was the representative there, and he passed the baton to other priests. And but the thing is, there was a separate king. Like there were kings of Israel, and there were high priests. So the king and priest were not combined in the one office. It was too much work, I guess, for these weaklings. All they could do was to handle the priesthood, slaughter all that meat, stab it with the fork. That's hard work. And now you got to sit on a throne too and make the laws. Are you kidding me? We'll give that to another guy. But Jesus Christ is both king and priest in the millennium, and that's a big deal. And it's God's purpose that the nation Israel be a kingdom of priests. And in fact, if you go to 1 Peter 2:8, a royal priesthood. You're a royal priesthood. Royal has to do with kingship, with wearing those purple robes of royalty. So it's a combination. And in the perfect place in the thousand years, that's the way it's going to be. Because Israel's going to do this under their new chief priest. They're going to rule the nations for God and bring the nation's offerings to God. So when they bring the nation's offerings to God, they act as priests. When they rule the nations for God, they're acting as kings. So it would behoove their head then to be both priest and king. But again, you didn't see that in Israel's history. But we have this wonderful throwback. Sorry, Melchizedek, to refer to you as a throwback, but it's a throwback because God has a precedent here. This man who was king and priest of Salem, which was the name of Jerusalem before it became Jerusalem. And there's some theories out there that Jerusalem went from Salem, peace, to Jerusalem, a city of peace at the time of Abraham. So Melchizedek blesses Abraham, and Abraham gives a tithe to him. Apparently, this man was so important that when you pass through his territory, you better give him a present of some kind, because this guy was the king of righteousness. Well, yeah, it is what his name means. In Hebrew, the two elements are king just, king dash just. So he was king of justness, that is king of righteousness. And he's also king of Salem, which is king of peace. So righteousness and peace, all these things that are going to earmark, they're going to characterize the 1,000-year kingdom. I'm going to tell you why that's all this. I know, who cares? I'm going to tell you why this is important. Why don't I just do this now? Because you need to know this. Because no king comes except out of Levi, except out of the tribe of Levi and the order of Aaron. You can't be a priest in Israel. Did I say priest? Did I say king? I meant priest. You cannot be a priest. The Lord is out of Judah, so he couldn't technically be a priest unless the priesthood changes. So who the heck is going to say, well, we're going to change the priesthood in midstream? We're all of a sudden going to say that, okay, you can be a priest if you're out of Judah. So this would really, in the minds of the Israelites receiving this letter of Hebrews, they can't imagine how this Jesus Christ Paul is preaching could be their high priest. How can he be? He can't be. He's out of Judah. No priest arises out of Judah. He's got to be out of Levi. But then Paul says, but remember, there was another king and priest who is actually greater than Abraham, and that he blessed Abraham while Levi was still in the loins of Abraham. Do you get that? I'm going to get all into this, into Hebrews chapter 7. But see, Levi was not yet born because Abraham was his grandfather. No, it was his great-grandfather, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Jacob was the father of the 12 sons. So his great-grandfather, Abraham. So Levi was still in the loins of Abraham when he met Melchizedek. And Melchizedek at that time was greater than Abraham. How do I know this? All right, we'll skip ahead to Hebrews 7:7. Now, beyond all contradiction, the inferior is blessed by the better. And Melchizedek blessed and tithed Abram. So, beyond all contradiction, I dare you to contradict this. I dare you to contradict this. The inferior is blessed by the better. So, Abraham's blessed by Melchizedek. Melchizedek is the better. He's the better. In verse 6, he who is not of their genealogy, i.e. Melchizedek, has tithed Abraham and has blessed him who has the promises. He has blessed and tithed Abraham. And the inferior is blessed by the superior. Therefore, the evidence here is that this Melchizedek, who was before Abraham, is actually greater than Abraham. So we're going to revert to him in order to make room for Jesus Christ, because he's a priest according to the order of Melchizedek. Who'd ever heard of that? It's always the order of Aaron, the order of Aaron, the order of Aaron, who is of Levi. Gotta be the order of Aaron. Ah, there's a new order. There's going to be a transfer of the priesthood that's commensurate with a transfer of the law. In other words, new covenant, new priesthood. This was radical information to these Hebrews. And you have to have some kind of evidence. Like, where are you pulling this out of, Paul? Or whoever, they didn't know it was Paul. Where's this writer pulling this out of? Then he brings up this Melchizedek dude. Oh, yeah, we remember legends about this king priest that was in Jerusalem before Abraham or Moses or any of our people even got there. And he wasn't of the Israel descent because he preceded Israel. He met Israel's grandfather, and Israel's grandfather shook and trembled before Melchizedek. So Melchizedek was greater. So now we're reverting to him and saying that Jesus Christ is a priest of the order of Melchizedek. And he had to jog their memory because this guy was way back in their hoary history, you see. So why does God do it this way? Well, I don't know for sure, okay? But there's evidence that he did it before. There's a precedent in Galatians 3. Paul says, and I know I told you this before, but for new listeners, we're going to say it again. It doesn't hurt to repeat it. Galatians 3:15, brethren, I'm saying this as a human covenant. Likewise, having been ratified, no one is repudiating or modifying it. Now to Abraham, the promises were declared, and to his seed. Now, the point here being, at verse 17, this I'm saying, a covenant having been ratified before by God, the law having come 430 years later, 430 years afterward, does not invalidate so as to nullify the promise. For if the enjoyment of the allotment is of law, it's no longer of promise. Yet God has graciously granted it to Abraham through the promise. Okay, the whole point here, Paul's big deal is faith, right? Faith. We're justified by faith, not by works of law. Israel would have freaked out at that. How can you say not by works of law? It's only by law. There's no precedent. Paul says, oh yes, there is. God made a covenant 430 years before the law. He ratified it with Abraham, and it has to do with faith. God promised Abraham. Remember, I told you yesterday, put Abraham to sleep, swore by himself, and he did it, and it speaks of faith. And there's a precedent, and the law that comes 430 years afterward does not invalidate that promise God made to Abraham. So again, we're reverting to something previously God did that everybody forgot about and say, no, the law doesn't supersede that. The law came subsequent to it. So what's the greater, the law or the promise God made to Abraham by faith? The promise God made to Abraham by faith, that came first. Likewise, Melchizedek comes first before Levi was even invented. The promise by faith came first before we'd even heard of Mosaic law. And the fact that there was a king and a priest before there was even such thing as a guy named Levi proves that this is something greater. God's reverting to it, and Jesus Christ is a priest according to the order of Melchizedek, not the order of Aaron. People need to know this. The Israelites needed to know it. The Hebrews needed to know it, because otherwise Paul was on shaky ground. He was pulling this out of his, but not now. He has scriptural precedent. This has been Martin Zender. More on Melchizedek tomorrow. watching a bird the other day in Johnstown. I think this was yesterday. I was watching a bird at the Sheets station. That's a gas station here, if you've never heard of it. The Sheets brothers started a chain of service stations that sell, besides gasoline for your car, peanut M&Ms. Don't ask me how I know this. Don't ask how I know it.
Yeah.
Yeah, when all's lost, peanut M&Ms can restore my faith in a wicked eon. You know, temporarily. It's all temporary, but I'll take it. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender. I was watching a bird, and it hit me that birds... Oh, you're going to think this is nuts. Should I tell them this? Yeah, why not? They already... Yeah, you already know about me. Birds... All right, you ready for this revelation? I'm going to give you a revelation. Yeah, we're going to get into Melchizedek here. More about him, one of my favorite Bible characters, but here's the revelation. Birds don't have arms. But you really don't realize it until you watch them. They have to bounce around on their legs, and you take their little breasts, and right where there should be arms, there's nothing. It's a little round, kind of a concave breast, and there should be two little sticks poking out, which are arms, with which they could pick up food. Like, I was eating a pack of... salted cashews, and I dropped one, and this little bird came over, and they don't walk. Wouldn't you love it if they'd walk like John Wayne in a Western's like, all right, pilgrim, I'm going to come over there and get that little nut. Step aside, or I'll head you off at the pass. So this bird, it didn't strut, he bounced. Boop, 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 boop. They feel they have to bounce. And why they have to move their heads 50 times a second, I got no idea what they're doing there. They're nervous. Very nervous, these birds. So this little bird came over, hopped over, and then I was frustrated for him because I wish he'd had arms. He could have reached down, picked up that cashew, and ate it, but instead he had to hop over, and then it's almost like, just imagine your arms tied behind your back your whole life. Then you know what it's like to be a bird, all right? Put your hands, tie your hands behind your back or have a loved one do it for you, and try to live. Just try to live from that point forward. All right, it's tough. Birds have it tough, but they can fly. You know, that's the one great thing. You would think that, like, you would fly, like, as you swim. You kind of move your arms like you're treading through the air, you know, but they can't even do that. They just have to fly in this, like, hope for the best. I don't know what they do with their legs. I think they tuck them under their concave breasts. So appreciate the fact that you have arms. That's the point of this whole story. I appreciate today that I have arms. I'm holding my Bible, and I can adjust the volume on my computer. I can use a fork or a spork, and it's just an amazing thing. I do lots of things. Then I have hands at the end of my arms. That's an entire another topic altogether. We'll get to that some other day. Back to the Melchizedek priest. I'm going to be reading to you from Hebrews chapter 7. Now behold how eminent this one is, to whom the patriarch Abraham gives a tithe also. Okay, I got to clarify something. Now, I said that the inferior is blessed by the greater, and that Melchizedek blesses Abraham. So that proved there that Abraham was the inferior. Now, there's a second witness here, namely that Abraham tithed Melchizedek. He gave him a tenth of his spoils from the battle with Chedorlaomer. Chedorlaomer, sorry, it's a hard C-H right there. Chedorlaomer. And he tithed a tenth, well, duh, that's a redundancy, a tithe is a tenth, of the spoils to this eminent Melchizedek. So this means that Levi, in the loins of Abraham, tithed Melchizedek. Now, Levi, in the ensuing years, was going to receive the tithe, right? The priesthood receives the tenth from the grain and everything from the rest of the tribes of Israel. But now we have one who is receiving tithes from Levi, quote unquote, in the loins of Abraham, his great-great-grandson. So that's a double witness that this Melchizedek is greater. And here we're going to find out in that in verse 4. You don't often hear the word booty to describe loot, but here we go. Behold how eminent this one is, to whom the patriarch Abraham gives a tithe also of the best of the booty. The best of the booty. Now, it sounds like a DVD I once saw, Best of the Booty, but no, it refers to Abraham tithing Melchizedek, and that is pure and holy. That's the best of the booty right there, baby. And indeed, Those are the sons of Levi who obtain the priestly office have a distinction to take tithes from the people according to the law. That is, their brethren, even those who have come out of the loins of Abraham. Yet he who is not of their genealogy has tithed Abraham and has blessed him who has the promises. Now I'm confused. What? Wait a minute. Yet he who is not of their genealogy, you've got to be talking about Melchizedek there, has tithed Abraham. So Melchizedek ties Abraham. Wait a minute. But then back in verse 6, now behold how eminent this one is, to whom the patriarch Abraham gives a tithe. What the heck? They're tithing each other. It's like a mutual tithe, like ping pong tithe. I tithe you, you tithe me. I guess they each gave each other gifts, but the remarkable thing, this is what I'm figuring out live here on the air. The remarkable thing is not that Melchizedek would have tithed Abraham or Abram. It was the fact that Abraham would even condescend. At least it would seem a condescension if you know that out of his loins is coming the epic Levi to whom tithes would be given. And yet, what is epic compared with eminent? We have epic Levi, but eminent Melchizedek. So there's a mutual tithe, ping pong tithe going on here, but the blessing is the big distinction, and we're going to pick that up here in verse 5. In verse 6, yet he who is not of their genealogy has tithed Abraham and has blessed him who has the promises. Or Abraham has the promises, Melchizedek blesses him. Here's the shocker, verse 7, now beyond all contradiction, the inferior is blessed by the better. And here indeed, dying men are obtaining tithes. Dying men are obtaining tithes, namely Abraham and his progeny. Yet there, one of whom it is attested that he is living, and we're talking about Melchizedek. I forgot he is living. I need to mention this, an association with saying of Melchizedek, he is living. It says also, you know, he's translated King of Righteousness, told you about that yesterday, King of Salem, King of Peace. Now, this is a curious statement, verse 3. Fatherless, motherless, without a genealogy, having neither a beginning of days nor consummation of life, yet picturing the Son of God, is remaining a priest to a finality. Speaking of Melchizedek, he had neither father, this is what it says, fatherless, motherless, without a genealogy, having neither a beginning of days nor consummation of life, yet picturing the Son of God, is remaining a priest to a finality. Now, this is not to say, many people get confused here, which obviously I can see where you would. What? This Melchizedek is such an eminent character that he didn't have a father or mother, he didn't have a beginning, he always was? It's just this. It's the fact that one of the big points of dissimilarity between the Aaronic priesthood and the Melchizedek priesthood is that Melchizedek combines the offices of king and priest. Here's another point of dissimilarity. It's the matter of succession. The continuance of the Aaronic priesthood was a matter of descent, who your daddy was. It was very important. It was so important to a priest to be able to note his genealogy. He had to be able to tell you who his father and mother was. Probably had to have it documented. He had to trace his lineage back to Aaron. He had to, or he couldn't even be a priest. And he had to keep it going by marrying within the priestly caste. It was all very insider stuff. So there's a big contrast here being made to this, because since genealogy is so important to Aaron's folks, we're purposely not mentioning a genealogy with Melchizedek, because the first thing you'd want to know is, what's this guy's pedigree? Well, guess what? We don't care about his pedigree, because this is not a thing about succession. This is not a thing about your physical ties. This is something far greater than, well, I was the father, the grandfather, the great-grandfather, the great-great-grandfather. Doesn't matter. What a contrast. There's not a mention of Melchizedek's father or mother. Not that he didn't have one, just no mention of it. So there's no idea even of succession here. And the guy died. Obviously, he was a human. Well, I guess it's not obvious the way this is worded. But the point is that we're getting a glimpse, a picture of Jesus Christ, because his death is not mentioned, nor is his birth mentioned. And again, the only reason this is remarkable is because these things were so important to the Aaronic priesthood, to the order of Aaron, so important to have all these documents. No documents with Melchizedek. Well, he's disqualified. No, he's greater than documents. He's greater. He's remaining a priest to a finality. And these omissions, again, are intentional because his priesthood, the offices combined of king and priest, picture the priesthood of Jesus Christ, who does not require a genealogy or a successor. So Jesus Christ, nobody follows him. And yeah, his genealogy is listed in Luke, is it Luke chapter 2? But not for the priesthood, just to show his descent from Adam, but not for the priesthood, because he's a new order. He's the first of a new order of priesthood. All right, now let's go back to the text here in Hebrews chapter 7. Verse 11, if indeed then perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for the people had been placed under law with it, what need is there still for a different priest to arise according to the order of Melchizedek, a different priest, and not said to be according to the order of Aaron? For the priesthood being transferred, there it is, love that word, transferred. The priesthood is being transferred from Aaron to Melchizedek. And this was a big deal. Of necessity, there's coming to be a transference of law also. For he of whom these things are said, partakers of a different tribe from which not one has given heed to the altar. The one they're speaking of here is Jesus Christ. And of his tribe, that is Judah, no one has given heed to the altar from Judah. In other words, no priest has ever arisen out of Judah that had to be of Levi. For it is taken for granted, verse 14, that our Lord has risen out of Judah, to which tribe Moses speaks nothing concerning priests. Ah, I love that plain statement there. And it is still more superabundantly sure, if a different priest is arising according to the likeness of Melchizedek, who has not come to be according to the law of a fleshly precept, but according to the power of an indissoluble life, for he is attesting that thou art a priest for the eon according to the order of Melchizedek. Let's stop there for a minute and get our breath. That's a quote from Psalm. It's either Psalm 85 or 82, somewhere in the 80s. If it's not there, read the whole book of Psalms. It's the only other place besides, I think, Genesis 14 where Melchizedek is mentioned. Thou art a priest for the eon, not forever, for the eon according to the order of Melchizedek. Man, I'm looking at my time. I can't believe I've run out of time here. All right, tomorrow I'm going to tell you why the Aaronic priesthood was a treadmill that never accomplished its object. And we're going to contrast that with the Melchizedek priesthood. And we're going to look at the time element. I'm going to tell you why it's important that that phrase for the eon is here. Of course, the King James would say, thou art a priest forever. Oh, that would be a total disaster. If Jesus Christ was a priest forever, it would be a slap in the face to Jesus Christ. We just can't have it. He's a priest for the eon. Am I insulting him? No, I'm glorifying him. Tune in tomorrow to find out how.
Colossians 2:18. Let no one be arbitrating against you who wants, in humility and the ritual of messengers, to parade what he has seen. Feignedly, puffed up by his fleshly mind, not holding the head. That's what we're doing here. We're holding the head, who is Christ. If then, verse 20, I'm going down to 20. If then you died together with Christ, and that's my whole message. We died together with Christ. That's why I say you don't have to crucify yourself. That's why I say you don't have to die to yourself. If you died together, why, as living in the world, are you subject to decrees? You should not be touching. You should not be tasting. You should not be coming into contact. Paul says these things are all for corruption. They're going to end up corrupting instead of curing, in accord with the directions and teachings of men. Now, Paul says these things indeed have an expression of wisdom in willful ritual and humility and asceticism, but they're not of any value toward the surfeiting of the flesh. Now, I want to read this out of the Phillips translation because he really, I think, hits this good. J.B. Phillips translates it this way. If through your faith in Christ you are dead to the principles of this world's life, why, as if you were still part and parcel of this worldwide system, do you take the slightest notice of these purely human prohibitions? Don't touch this. Don't taste that. Don't handle the other. Paul says this, that, and the other will all pass away after use. Now, this is important. Listen to this. Paul says, I know that these regulations look wise with their self-inspired efforts at piety, their policy of self-humbling, and their studied neglect of the body. But in actual practice, they are of no moral value but simply pamper the flesh. Well, that's a paradox, isn't it? Those folks in the nunneries and the monasteries, they're actually pampering their flesh.